Replenish me. When I say that, what comes up for you? And when's the last time that you've done that? And where do you feel that in your body? Well, this is my invitation to you to explore the four steps of my Replenish Me program, where women learn how to release, restructure, refresh, and rebirth. Showing up in the world, being true to yourself. Only choosing words that honor your values, and only allowing behaviors and people in your life who do the same. Connect with me by reaching out at bit.ly/replenishwithlove and explore Replenish Me. And now for tonight's show. Hello and welcome to the Free to Be show. I'm so excited today to have Lotus Ritchie, and she is actually a live radio show host who I really greatly admire, and I love to watch her show, and I encourage you guys to do the same. But here's some fun, exciting things to know about her before I formally allow her to speak. She was also a member of the U.S. Navy, and she's served the U.S. abroad and locally in the Department of Defense as a substance use disorder counselor. And she's also served military clients and diagnosed them and assigned them to the level of treatment to help address their concerns and disorders. She also was the liaison between their command and hospital so that they could address their illness with substance disorder and mental illness. Currently, she is the CEO of Lotus Ritchie Ignites. And this is where she helps people to find their why and jumpstart their business. And she speaks four languages. And one of her most recent books was published in Spanish. And now we'll talk about that today because she's relaunching it in English. So welcome to the show, Lotus.
Thank you, Cordelia. It is a pleasure to be here. I'm super happy and super excited to be a guest on your show. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm curious, what are the four languages you speak?
I speak English, Japanese, a bit of French, a bit of course, I speak Spanish. You just wanted to know four. Okay, and a little bit of German. So, hablando español, so, parlez-vous français, and a little bit of Japanese. Typically, every day I speak Japanese.
Okay, very nice. So, how did you come to publish a book in Spanish?
Well, I co-wrote the book with 12 fantastic authors, but this was the brainchild of a young lady named Rosemarie Sanchez and Analia Exani. And they are just amazing. And I actually met them almost a year ago. I met Sanchez because we actually co-wrote a book where we made Guinness World Record history. And that's how we met. And then things just culminated from there. And I've been so blessed to write the book with so many wonderful authors. Lynn Herrick Verges, she's one of the authors from the United States. We have so many folks. But anyway, I want to say a special thanks to them. I'm sure they're going to be watching the program. And thanks to you for even bringing that up, because it's folks like you, Cordelia, that help entrepreneurs and writers like myself expand what our message is and bring it to the world. So thank you for asking.
Absolutely, my pleasure. So I want to dive a little bit deeper and, you know, understand where'd you come from, like what's your story, and how did you find your why and jumpstart your business?
Well, I'm a Jersey girl. And even though I've traveled all over the world, I'm a Jersey girl, and probably still a Jersey girl at heart, even though I really love Japan, and Japan was home to me for a number of years. I think my why really started at a very young age. I remember at 6 or 7 standing on a box in my cousin's backyard, and all the other little cousins and other friends were standing around me. And it was like I was giving a sermon from the box. This is the funniest thing, right? And so my mom was looking out the window like, what is she doing? What is she telling these kids? You know, I don't know what I was telling them exactly, but I'm sure that the message was, this was a part of the message. Love everyone. Treat everyone like you want yourself to be treated. And that's been my message throughout my life, to just love people for who they are and who they're becoming. I truly believe that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, and it's not the other way around. And if we see the spirituality in each and every one of us, it makes the difference. I've been recently blessed to be a part of a wonderful company called Gimski, and their mantra, if you will, is the God in me sees the God in you. And that's always been my motto. Let us see the God in someone else as we kind of illuminate the God in us. So, that's who I am. I'm also the little girl who was raped at 6 years old by my babysitter's grandson. And I had to learn forgiveness. And 6 is pretty young. Both of my parents, they worked to take care of the family. My dad, he had his own floor waxing company. So both of my parents had to work, as the case for many families. And some families come in a single household. So there's a babysitter. But that day, the babysitter had to go out to a doctor's appointment or something, and her 11 or 12-year-old grandson was there. And the thing that I learned from that experience is that there must have been some guy doing to him what he had done to me. And with that, I learned forgiveness, because I looked at the horrible situation he must have faced. I sought to understand rather than just to be understood or to feel like, you know, woe is me. And I think that helped me to become, over time, the person that I've become, learning to forgive and learning to move on and not get stuck in the situation or the emotions of the situation. I elected to rise above it and move on. And that's why I guess God gave me Ignite and Take Flight. And that's what I do. I help people to ignite and take flight in every area of their life.
That's so powerful. So I'm just curious, not at the age of 6 did you come to the forgiveness? Like, at what point did that drop in for you?
You know, I really got to tell you, at 6, I think I was more afraid than anything else, because this kid's family worked for the mafia. I don't know if you're familiar with that term. Okay, she's like, yeah, I'm familiar with that term.
I'm from Chicago originally.
Okay, so you know. So this kid was like, you know, if you tell somebody I'm going to kill you, you know, when we're kids, we hear things. So, you know, I already knew. So I think fear kind of made me keep my mouth shut. I did tell one person, that was my older sister, and I swore her to secrecy. But I grew up in a family that really believed in forgiveness, but also believed in standing up for yourself. But I carried that for a long time, and it really robbed me of maybe some of the experiences that I would have had, because it made me not trust people. And I think over time, as I grew and as I really got more into me, understanding me, working on me, the forgiveness just came. But I think at that early age, I used it somehow as a protection mechanism so that I could go on. Because I think if I didn't use that, because I was taught by my family, you forgive, you love, you know, we were in church and all that. I think if I didn't use it, it would have been a different story. Now, you may know I'm a suicide intervention trainer for ASSIST. I train trainers. And I think so many people, use suicide as a coping mechanism to deal with some of the trauma in their life. And so I'm happy that you asked that question, because really to pinpoint it at what age, it's really difficult to say. And you know, Cordelia, maybe I was carrying it well into my 20s. I think at 22, when my mom and I, we were on the phone and we were talking, and I finally told her, she was horrified. She told my dad, he was horrified. Now, by this time, I'm in the United States Navy, just like your daughter, right?
Yeah.
So I'm in the United States Navy. And I think the military and the way my parents raised me helped me to focus on what I had to focus on and move forward. But during my military time, I think once I shared it with my mom and I heard the hurt in her voice, I think that even pushed me further to being able to forgive. Because like I shared with my mom, it must have been horrible for that person. But I think maybe you're right. Maybe at 22 was really the breaking point where I embraced the fact that, you know what, you've got to really forgive. And I think I was able to do it in that realm. But this is what I learned many, many years later from Ayala Van Zandt. In her book, In the Meantime, I think it was In the Meantime, she shared this idea that you don't forgive people for them, you forgive people for you. And during that time of my life, I had been really, really hurt emotionally. And I thought I'd forgiven this person who had apologized for what they did to offend me. But you know, every time I heard her name, it made me angry. So I realized I hadn't forgiven. But I would listen to Ayala Van Zandt every morning on the way to work. I would get on the road maybe 5 o'clock in the morning. And so, you know, there's not much traffic and the quietness of it all. You really have a lot of time to think. And for me, it was like real clear. And I would hear her playing on the tape, cassette tape, for those of you. We probably just dated ourselves, Cordelia. It's a cassette tape, right? So I was listening to her on the cassette tape. And she kept saying it. You don't forgive people for them. You forgive people for you. And it was like a light coming on. Hmm. It was like a light coming on. And not even in that moment in the car. I think I realized it when my ex had called me up New Year's Day and said, listen, they were in Germany at the time. I'm so sorry. I didn't understand it then, but I understand it now. I'm so sorry for how I hurt you and blah, 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 blah. And I said, okay, I forgive you. But it wasn't, I don't think, until that moment did I really forgive. And now imagine, I carried this for maybe 6 years.
Yeah.
So that episode, I didn't forgive till then, but that in that moment, it freed me.
Yeah.
It really freed me. And I use that to help my clients to free themselves. Because I think a lot of times, Cordelia, we think that, oh, I got to forgive them for them. But that's not true. Because when we don't forgive people, it locks us into a vicious cycle of lack. And I say that because the freeing of oneself through the abundance of thought and mind, right? And our spiritual progress helps us to move into a greater abundance. Because I really believe that when we don't free ourselves, we try to keep that person bound. Even though that person has gone on with their life, they're not thinking about you. You try to keep them bound because you're locked into this hurt, into this trauma, into this pain, and you're not forgiving yourself. Because I think that's really what it really starts at, self-forgiveness. Forgiving ourselves, no, not because we were raped, but forgiving ourselves for blaming ourselves. Because many of us blame ourselves. So I train people to understand that you must free yourself by forgiving yourself first. And once you forgive yourself, the freedom that comes from it, to look that person dead in the eyeball and say, I forgive you, and really mean it, is so powerful and is so self-serving. And that's what I train people to do. And it's hard. It's really hard. But I tell people this, Cordelia, it's as hard as you make it.
Yeah. 100%. And, you know, I'm going to share this quote with you. If you cannot give yourself the mercy of forgiveness, you will never be able to find it in your heart to forgive anyone else.
That's true.
That's her quote. That's her quote.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. And you really have to. You have to have that mercy, because that mercy starts with you. And it's so apparent that so many of us get locked in this self-guilt, this self-sabotage. We beat ourselves up. You know, I worked in the prison system for 7 years.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I worked in the prison system for 7 years, and I met a lot of people, many brilliant people, but many people who kept beating themselves up over and over and over again. And in the prison system, I wore many hats. If they went up for sanctioning some of the inmates, I was their attorney. I represented them in the cases. I was on the job board. I was a supervisor. I was over quality control and warehousing and things like that. And I got to tell you, I've seen all kinds of people. I've been surrounded by all kinds of people. I worked in a prison where I only worked with men. And I had about 100 men that worked for me. And what I noticed, and this was pervasive through every race and through every age and through every person, no matter what their sexual orientation was, what their religion was, no matter. People just wanted to be successful.
Yeah.
They wanted to be loved. But the most important thing was many of them were trying to find ways to forgive themselves. Because when we send people to jail, we send them with the sentence of, you did wrong, and we're not going to forgive you. You're going to have to pay. And when you're sent away, oftentimes with that message, but you don't get the tutelage of, okay, I got it. I screwed up. Now, how do I make it right? They spend so much time damning themselves. And I'm so thankful that I worked in the prison system, because I was able to help so many people understand you have to free the way you think. Because you can be locked up, just like Nelson Mandela was locked up. But his mind was free.
Yeah.
His mind. And, you know, that helped me. I remember when I was in Japan, I couldn't walk for a while without a cane. The doctors didn't know what was going on with me. They weren't sure what was happening. And I worked for the hospital system, so I had surgeons and everybody, you know, at my beck and call if I needed somebody. One of my clients was a surgeon. So the thing was, is that I didn't know why this was happening. And I'm the type of person, I asked God, what's going on? Why is this happening? And God said, because I was like, why me? God was like, why not you?
Yeah.
And I thought that was a sucky response.
We never like it.
No, I didn't like that response. But what happened was, a friend of mine, he contacted me. He was on a ship. He contacted me and he said, Lotus, I've got this young lady on my ship. She needs to talk to you because she's having suicidal ideations. Mm-hmm. Well, at that time, my ex-partner and I, we were apart. My ex-partner had gone back to the United States. I was there in Japan by myself, living alone. And I was going through this mental anger. Why is this happening? I need to be at work. There are people that need me. Little did I know I needed me more than anyone. And at that time, when my friend contacted me about the young lady that was contemplating suicide, I needed her, because mm-hmm. it wasn't her life that I saved. It was my life that I saved. And the funny thing about it is that when you are a suicide intervention trainer, you know the signs, even in your own self. But some of us, we don't want to see the mirror. And a friend of mine would come over. She would say, have you eaten today? How are you? And sometimes I'll say, no, don't come over. No, I haven't eaten. Do you want to? No, I don't want anything. But sometimes she would show up on my doorstep and I would make her stand outside. I wouldn't let her in my house. And then finally, I let her come in the walkway and we would talk. And I think I didn't want to let her in because she would see. She mm-hmm. would see me. Yeah. You know what I mean? She would really see me. And when I did finally let her in, I don't know what I was thinking, Cordelia, but she said to me, I'm worried about you. Mm-hmm. And you know how we can be sometimes.
Yes.
I looked her dead in the eyeball and said, what you mean you worried about me? Am I condescending, right? I was condescending. Right. But I knew exactly what she meant because we were both suicide intervention trainers. She certified me, so she already knew the signs.
Right.
But because she was brave enough to say that, it helped me face what could have been. And it helped me save my own life because I couldn't walk without a cane. No one knew why. But shortly after that, God sent somebody to me and they prayed for me. And I've been healed ever since. Where people thought I would never be walking on my leg, I'm walking. But this is the thing, Cordelia. Everything comes back to your why. My why was to help people, to help them to see that their why is good enough, that who they are is good enough, that they're not just good, they're better than good. They're great. And that's why when you see me or you get an email from me, if it's directly from me, I'll say great morning, because good isn't enough. So with that, I learned once I left Japan, why God allowed me to go through not being able to walk on my own for a while, because I started working at a hospital in Atlanta, the Shepherd Center, and I'm so thankful. They deal with people who've had horrific traumas, and doctors sometimes have to give them the regretful news that they'll never walk again. I worked there, and I was the captain of security for that hospital. Never thought I'd go back into security, but you know, when your bank account starts to go low after you think, well, I'm not going to work for a while. I was working on some properties that I own. And, you know, I was like, maybe I need to get a job. So God sent me there for a lot less than I was accustomed to making, a lot less. But I went because God sent me. But there, Cordelia, there I found that people needed my story. And only in Japan had I started telling my story of the fact that my father had used drugs, the fact that I'd been in shooting galleries. You know what a shooting gallery is, Cordelia?
No.
You from Chicago, you know.
I don't know.
So a shooting gallery is an abandoned building where people go to use drugs. And oftentimes they use their bodies for sexual favors or drugs. My aunt was strung out on drugs. And when my grandmother died, we had to look for her and find her. I was little then. And my mom and dad wasn't going to leave us with anybody. So they took us with them. So I've been to those places. And I think some of those places are the things that saved my life. Because, you know, being raped at 6 and then going through some other stuff, a lot of times people cope with that with drugs, but I didn't. So I'm thankful for every little occurrence in my life. And I'd been to those places, but it wasn't until I started sharing my story was I really able to help people. Now, I've helped thousands of people with substance use disorders, but it was when I shared my story, the real me, the down dirty, that's when things started changing. And when I went to the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and I started sharing my story about how, you know, I didn't understand why I couldn't walk. I shared with them the story of Norman Cousins, the Miracle Man. And I shared with people this story, and people that thought they would never walk again, it changed the trajectory of their life. I remember this one kid. I'm just going to call him Brandon.
Okay.
I was at the desk at the hospital, And this one kid, he came up in his wheelchair. He said, "Miss Lotus, you see that kid over there? He's always in group. Nobody, we cannot have a word in edgewise because he's always, woe is me, woe is me." Well, the kid Brandon had been knocked out. And when I say knocked out, I'm talking about the fact that a few years ago, here in the United States, gang members were being jumped into gangs by knocking people out on the street. Do you recall that?
I do, yeah. Wow, that's way back.
Yeah. Well, Brandon was a victim of that. He was doing very well in his job. He might have been making about $60,000 per year. And for a kid in his 20s, that's pretty good money. So when they knocked Brandon out, he hit his head on the ground and it paralyzed him.
Ooh.
And he thought he would never walk again. He felt hopeless. And the young man that asked me to talk to him, I said, "Well, okay, I'll talk to him." Now, mind you, I was in my security suit, but I had my coaching business on the side as well. And he was like, "Could you talk to him?" But I knew what my calling was, what my why was. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll talk to him. So I formulate a rapport with the kid and his family. And the family talks to me, "Lotus, you know, could you talk to him? Because he's just hopeless." And, you know, and I was like, sure. So he comes up to the counter one day with his family, because they would always go past my desk and there was a sitting area to the right and they would always eat pizza there. That was like his favorite food. And so one day I said, "Hey, come here for a second." And he said, "Yes, Miss Lotus." I said, "Let me ask you something." I said, "I want you to look me in my eyeball. Look me in my eyeball." So he laughed just like you. And he looks in my eyeball and he said, "Yes, Miss Lotus." I said, "Do you think you're going to walk?" And he got really quiet. And his face was just so solid. And he looked up at me and he said, "No, Miss Lotus, I don't think I'm going to walk again." And I looked back at him. I said, "Look at me, look back at my eyeball, look at my eyeball." We did that. And I said, "I know you don't." I said, I read your affect. I know you don't believe that you're going to walk again. And I told him about my story when I was on the cane and I couldn't walk and I couldn't wipe my butt and I couldn't drive and I couldn't do all these things. But I said that I would do it. And I wrote down on a piece of paper, Norman Cousins and YouTube. I said, "Now, I want you to go watch this at your leisure. Now, I want you to come back to me after you watch it, okay?" He said, "Yes, ma'am, I'll do it." I said, "Okay." So he went away. And then maybe the next day or so, he came back. Coming down the hall in his wheelchair, rolling along. He comes up, "Come here." I said, "You watch it?" He said, "Yes, ma'am." I said, "Now look me in my eyeball, look me in my eyeball," right? So he looked me in my eyeball. And I said, "Now I'm gonna ask you this again." I said, "Do you think you're gonna walk?" He said, "Yes, ma'am. I think I'm gonna." See, because my story helped him, because my story made him look at me differently than a captain who was in authority over the whole security of the Shepherd Center. He saw me as a person that had a parallel story to him that was dealing with the same similarities that he was dealing with. And then I took it a step further by sharing the Norman Cousins story with him, because Norman Cousins was in the hospital and they basically told Norman Cousins, "The only way you out of this place is in a body bag."
Yeah.
And Norman said, no, "I will leave this place. Not only will I leave this place, I'll be leaving this place walking on the day that I say so." And Norman said, "You know why?" He said, "Because as long as I have my mind, I could do anything." And that is the message that I give to people. And that's the message that I gave to Brandon. And when Brandon said, "Yes, ma'am, I think I'm going to walk," I knew I had him right where he needed to be, not where I needed him to be.
Right.
Where he needed to be to believe in God, to believe in the power of his own mind to help his own self ignite and take flight, as I always say. And so I told him, I said, look, Brandon, when you leave, now I have access to the record, so I know.
Right.
He said, I think I'm leaving in 3 weeks. I said, okay. I said, well, I'm giving you two.
Uh-oh.
And I'm standing and I got money in my pocket and jingling. And I pulled out a wad of money. I said, look, I got a pocket full of money. And it's just burning to buy you some pizza. I said, and I tell you what, you're leaving in 3 weeks. I'm giving you 2 weeks to walk. And now I'm not saying unaided, because when people start walking again, they have a belt around them. It's like a harness that they help them along with. And so I said, and if you come up here walking, I'll buy you any pizza you want. Deal? He said, deal. So the 2 weeks came, but I had to leave because my mother was dealing with cancer. Mm-hmm. So I had to fly to New Jersey. Told you I'm a Jersey gal.
Yeah.
I had to fly to New Jersey. And while I was there, the person that I left in my stead had called me and he said, Lotus, you know, this kid came up to me and he asked me to take a video of him. I said, oh, really? He said, yeah. He said, I got it in my other phone. So when you come back, I'll give it to you. I said, okay. So when I got back, he was able to transfer the video to me. And it was him. It was the kid. Because I told him, I said, if you come up here in 2 weeks, I just want you to come up. I want you to throw your head back and say, what's up, Miss Lotus?
Nice.
And when I saw that video, that's what he did. Mm-hmm. He looked dead into that camera, even though I wasn't there. And he said, what's up, Miss Lotus? And he was walking. Of his own volition.
I love that story. Because his why, yeah,
was bigger than his why not. Because I shared my why. And that's what I like people to do. Don't hide behind what you think is so embarrassing. Don't hide behind the fact that you were raped. Don't hide behind the fact that you were mistreated. Don't hide behind the fact that you have a learning disability. Don't hide behind the fact that you have one leg or no arms, because your story is your power and your why is your wisdom. And that's what I share with people, and that's how I help people to get to where they're going. And I say this all the time, I'm bringing inspiration to every nation, because my message is global and it's pervasive. Everybody just wants to win. People just want to ignite and take flight. But if they don't have people like you, Cordelia, or people like me, or other people that we've met to help them ignite and take flight, they're like the broken birds that I talk about in my new book. They're always hovering above the ground, and they never take off.
Take flight. Yeah.
They never take flight. That's right.
Wow. That's so powerful. You know, I heard so many things, like, The first thing I want to bring attention to was your point about forgiveness, but specifically self-forgiveness, and not in the way that we normally woe is me self-forgive,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You know, the allowing of our trueness to come out, self-forgiveness. And that is so very important. That's so aligned with the way I teach Replenish Me. Is about that kind of self-forgiveness. And we don't talk about that so much. So I'm so happy to hear that that's like completely part of your wisdom and your method and your story. And also, you know, energetically, you losing your use of your legs temporarily was really like a blessing.
Oh, yes. Oh,
100%.
Yes.
Yeah, it was allowing you to really regain your roots again.
Of course.
You know, and just let everything in your soul be aligned. So that
in
you
faith.
Can, yeah, in yeah. faith.
In faith.
So you can let people in, because it looks like you had a block with receiving.
Exactly.
As you tell that story with your friend that you didn't want to let in your house.
Right.
That
is because I'm such a giver, right? You know, and a lot of us, Cordelia, we're such givers. Yep. We forget that God wants to give to us as well as he wants us to give, okay? God wants to give because sometimes we give so much till we're depleted and we don't learn the craft and the very I am of giving, you know, because the I am is the God in us. So if the I am in us will not be open to the I am sending in the blessings, how can we really give out the blessings? A lot of people say, well, why do you pray with your hands like this? I made a pact with God. And I said, God, when I come before you, I open my hands. You know why? Because I told God, I want to freely give as well as freely receive. And it was hard for me to begin to do that, but I had to learn. And it challenged my faith because the lady that prayed for me in the bus terminal when I was on a cane, I never talked to her that I had problems with my knees. I was getting ready to go to Korea. I was going to take my cane, but she prayed for me. And from that day to this, I've never used that cane again. And that's the challenge of faith. And she told me, she said, Lotus, you're going to hear a voice tell you, you're not healed. She's going to say, if you start having pain, just know that you are healed. And from that day to this, I've never used a cane again. I've never had surgery. And if I have any days where my knees are bothering me, I reach out to my higher self and I say, thank you, because I'm happy, healthy, and healed.
Wow, so powerful. Well, we'll be right back and we'll get more into some ways that people can use that for themselves. About receiving. Lotus has got a really interesting story about this. So have you ever had challenges with receiving?
Oh yes, all the time. Because like I said, Cordelia, I'm a giver. So a lot of times givers, we have problems receiving and it's things that we have to overcome. We've got to work on it. I think Cordelia, we need to do a show for the people who have problems receiving because they're such givers. That'd be awesome.
But,
I want to say I did, and I think now I've learned more to be okay with receiving. And sometimes it still presents a challenge. Why? Because I'm such a giver. But I had to learn the hard way. So I'm gonna share this story with you. I was coming from Panera. I worked at Panera, I think, part-time, or I was doing something. Oh, I was coming from the university, I think. I was working for the University of Phoenix. And I got a flat tire. So I pull over by Panera in the parking lot near Panera. And I get out. I go in the trunk. And I've always worked on cars. I can drop engines. I can put in water pumps. I can change alternators, batteries, you name it. I can do it. And I'm great at it, not just bragging it, because somebody said, if you do it, it's not bragging, but, and I can do it. So I said, no, I'm good. I get out. I swear by a hydraulic jack because I like to work smart, not hard. So I get my hydraulic jack out. I get my little mat. I lay down because I'm cute. I don't want to get dirty. I don't mind getting dirty. But anyway, I get my mat, get everything out. And so this guy comes by. I think I'd gotten the car jacked up by this time. Guy comes by, oh, ma'am, you need a hand? You know, I can help you. I was like, no, I got it, right? And then this other guy comes by, ma'am, you need a hand? No, I got it, right? And then he's like, whoa, you know, we don't hardly see no women changing. No, so I'm like, yeah, I got it going on, right? So ego, Ego came in. Another guy comes. I think it was three guys come. Hey, ma'am, you need some help, blah, 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 right? No, I got it. I'm good. Ego. They're celebrating me. They're like, oh, you all this, you all that, because you can change the tire, right? Ego. I forgot to tighten up all the lug nuts on my tire.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I'm driving a Mercedes. The Mercedes, I think I got like 20-inch rims, chrome rims on it. And so the donut is not a 20-inch rim, so you can imagine, right? But I forget to tighten up the lug nuts. So I get in the car, and I'm driving. It's a beautiful, bright, sunny day. Got my sunroof open, music blasting, right? And I'm driving home, not far from home. But and I'm in Augusta, Georgia. So I leave Panera. And so for those of you that's in Augusta, Georgia, you know where Panera is. So I'm leaving Panera. I come out, and I go down this street. It's a two-way street, but the street is very narrow. So I'm driving down the street, and all of a sudden, now this is like a rush hour.
Oh my goodness.
I'm driving down the street. My tire flies off, Cordelia. I kid you not.
Oh my gosh.
It flies off into oncoming traffic. It goes across the street and down into the embankment. And all I can do is look like, oh God, please don't let that tire hit nobody, right? I don't know how this happened. It was only God. So the car is still moving. How? I don't know. And I'm able to get this car in this driveway. So I get the car in the driveway and I said, oh my gosh, I got to hurry up because I've got class tonight. I was working on probably my master's degree or something by this time, right? So I go to the door and I knock on the door and I said, hello, sir. I look up, it's Jay Jeffries. He's a broadcaster from, I don't know if it's Channel 5 or Channel 7 News in Augusta, Georgia, but it's Jay Jeffries. And I knew who he was because I thought he was a great guy, right? And still do, great guy. So I said, hello, hi, my name is Lotus. I told him what happened to my car. And I said, the black Mercedes right there, that's my car. I said, I have class tonight. Can I please leave it here and I'll come back and get it? Because it was so low to the ground, I had to go to my other vehicle and get like my other lifts to get the car up, to even get up under it good. So he was so kind and he said yes. And I think he gave me his number or something, or I gave him my number, and I think his wife was home or whatever, but just very nice people. So we get the car. I said, I'll come back. It'll be late because I've got school, but this is what I'll be driving when I come back. And he was so kind. But you know what that taught me? Ego. Keep ego out. When ego is in, tires fly off.
Oh my goodness.
But that takes you back to, you've got to be willing to accept. See, it's like the guy that was drowning.
Yeah.
Right? I was the guy. But yeah. I look cuter than him. Okay.
You were the girl.
Right. I'm the girl. It's the same thing. The guy was, it was a flood. God was sending people coming by. Hey, I got a ship. You want to jump on my ship? The guy said, no, go on. God gonna send somebody for me. Another person come by. Hey, I got a sailboat. You want to jump in? We got plenty of room for you. Nope. God is gonna send somebody for me. Hey, I got a surfboard. You want to use it? No, it's okay. God's going to send somebody for me. The guy drowns.
Yeah.
He meets God, okay? And God say, hi, how you doing? Welcome. And the guy says, God, I was waiting for you to send somebody to save me. You never sent nobody to save me. And God was like, wait a minute. I sent a ship. I sent a little sailboat. And the last ditch effort, I even sent you a surfboard and you still didn't do it. So for me, God sent the ship, the first guy. God sent the sailboat, the second guy. And God sent me a surfboard, the third guy. But instead of jumping on a surfboard, I chose to be overzealous because I didn't want to take. And I drove down, and instead of being on the surfboard, I had a flying wheel off my car. I'm just saying. So folks, I just, you know, don't succumb to the flying tires down the road. You know, stop, and take ego out of it and learn how to receive, because that's one of the biggest things. If we never learn how to receive, how can we really, really give from a full heart of love? And you have to receive with a full heart of love. And I had to work on it, and I'm better for it now. And I tell that story because it's true, it happened, and hopefully it will help somebody to understand that you're not the only person that may be dealing with that issue. Have you ever had that happen to you where it was hard for you to kind of take people's help or even ask for help?
Yeah, well, you know, I can't think of anything specific, but I can tell you, like, on the receiving, as far as things that I've been awarded, mm-hmm. you know, I went all the way to London, all the way to London to receive mm-hmm. an award, right?
Yes.
And I didn't receive the award in my heart, right? I had it in yes. my hand, mm-hmm. but it was just like, in my heart, it was literally like, I don't think I deserve this.
Yes.
I don't know why I'm getting mm-hmm. this right now.
Yes, yes.
This isn't mine. This mm-hmm. doesn't belong to me.
Yes. You know, Cordelia, I have a lot of my clients that used to have that type of problem, because we are telling ourselves that we are unworthy. I know a lot of folks who are sensational authors, they're speakers, people who have been in movies and all kinds of things. And I'm so blessed to know many of them. And we've had these conversations many times where they feel unworthy. They feel like it's bigger than them. And because they feel like it's bigger than them, they're not able to accept it in their heart. Yeah. And that's a powerful point you made, because you can get on all the stages in the world and accept all these awards and these accolades, but if you don't feel it in your heart and in your mind that you're worthy, then guess what? It's almost, in my opinion, like I was slapping God in the face, because God was saying, you are yeah. worthy. You are the I am inside of you. And so you're worth, and you're worthy of everything on this planet and above. But sometimes we get so locked down in our own mind. And this is where the forgiveness
yeah.
has to come in too. We have to forgive ourselves for feeling unworthy. And again, when we see ourselves as spiritual beings having a human experience, it makes us understand even the more that the God in us, the spiritual being in us having this human experience, is worthy of all things. All things. Why? Because we come from the energy of God.
Yep.
So if the energy of God, and it does, creates everything, then why are we not worthy of anything?
And you know what, Lotus? That's why when I finally decided to receive it, this is how I figured out that I hadn't received it. Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend of mine in November, like a full month later.
Yes.
And we're having coffee. And I'm like, she's like, so what were you in London for? I was like, oh, I received an award. Notice, didn't tell her what it was. She's like,
yes.
Okay, so what was it?
You don't tell me.
Suspense drama was happening. So I was like, oh, it was like best podcast host of mm-hmm. 2019. And she was like, you did what? I said, best podcast host of 2019. By Powerhouse Global. She was like, wow. And then I was like, wow.
Wow. Like, I did that.
And then I was like, yeah, wow. Yep. I said, you know what? I just received my award, like just now.
Yep. Because you felt like, okay, let me ask you this. Did you feel like, because she was saying, wow, you felt like she was giving you the right to say, wow, I deserve it?
Wow, that's a great question. I think it may have been that. I think that was probably exactly what it was. The other part of what it was for me was, she was someone that I actually care about their opinion.
Yes. Yes. And see, that's why a lot of us get stagnated, because we're waiting for someone else to give us approval and to validate us as being the best podcaster or the best speaker or the best coach or the best psychologist or the best philosopher or the best movie maker. We're waiting for someone else to ring our bell instead of ringing our own bell. And it's okay to ring your own bell, because someone very, very intelligent told me this one day. He said, you know what, Lotus, it's not bragging if you've done it. But a lot of times we're taught, oh, we have to be humble. Well, saying that you were, and congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Saying that you were or you are, it's your right. And see, it goes back to the birthright. Again, the spiritual being. It's our birthright to stand up and say, because of what God has done in me, I was able to do this in the world. If it wasn't meant for you, it wouldn't have come to you. It's like God opened the door and you was like, nah, God, it's all right. It's okay. Oh, wait, somebody said, she said, I accept it. But I've been there too. I helped this lady here in Washington, D.C. a couple months ago. And that's why I said, you know, I still work on it. I still work on it. We are a project constantly in motion. I helped this lady on the side of the road. She had a truck, had a flat tire, and another lady pulled up behind us. No guy stopped. Because they saw the ladies, we had it, right? So we got her situated, put her tire on. She was good to go. So she pulls out money to give me and the other lady. I didn't know. And I'm like, no, it's okay. You just, you know, help somebody when you can. So the other lady standing next to me was like, I'll take it. So she took hers and mine.
Yep.
I couldn't get mad about that.
Yeah,
you know why? Because what God made for me, I said, no, God, I'm good.
Yeah.
And she gave it to her. So just like she used that, because this is what the lady said, I take it because I got my nieces and them for the weekend. I'll use it to take care of them. Right.
Right.
She already was grateful.
Yeah.
Instead of me saying, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Because I got nieces and stuff too.
Yeah.
In college, you know. Instead of me saying, oh, thank you, I'll put it to use. Thank you, God. I was like, oh, no, you can't pay me for what I've done.
Yeah.
No, you help somebody else. But instead, I blocked her blessing. And that's what I had to learn. Don't block someone that's blessing you. Accept the blessing, because the blessing is coming from God through them to you.
They're just a vessel.
Because see, this is what I had to learn. When you do well and you serve, because that's what we're doing right now, we're serving. When we serve and the universe sends it back to us, it may not always come in the form that we've given it out.
Right.
So whatever form the blessing comes back, we have to like pray with our hands open.
Yeah.
Exactly. Freely give and freely receive.
And you know what, Lotus? That's when I decided, I said, okay, Cordelia, you've got issues with receiving, and we're going to fix that. So that's why I renamed my show Free to Be, because,
awesome.
Right? As much as I was talking about replenish me, so I'll fill myself up, but I won't receive it. But
exactly.
What if I make myself open and free to do?
Exactly.
You know, right? Hands
exactly.
open.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
And just be that vessel. So I'm
exactly.
I'm so.
And I was meant to tell you that.
Yeah,
you
were.
I was meant to tell you that because I don't talk about this a lot. I don't talk about this. Now, if someone asks, I talk about it. But you didn't ask, and I talked about it. So I guess it was meant to be for me to share this with you. So I feel so humble and thankful to be able to share that with you.
And I received that. I received that. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yeah, like as
and thank
I was
you for
listening
what you've shared
to,
with me.
Well, you know, it's a blessing, right? So for the one person who listens to the show, they're going to receive our blessing, the blessing of our conversation. So we're vessels, you know. But I want to just thank you for that. And as I was listening to you, I was like, okay, so That message is for me, which is why I even kept my podcast, because I like the conversations just for me.
Awesome. Awesome.
But I do share with other people clearly.
That's awesome. And speaking of sharing, don't forget, Cordelia, you're going to be on my show next week. I am super excited. I cannot wait to have you on the show, because I realized today that a part of the show needs to be for people who have concerns or issues with receiving. That's great. I can't wait till you tell whatever you want to share about receiving, because we gotta talk about that.
Yeah,
that's awesome. God is so good.
I'm excited. So thank you for being here. We're gonna just take one more break, and then we're gonna talk about your book. So this is Lotus's book. For those of you who are listening and not watching, my Spanish isn't that great. So could you read the title of the book for us, please?
Of course. This book is wonderful. It's Cabrando Paredes, Volume 2. It was written with Rosemary Sanchez and Analia Exani. My name is Lotus Roche, and I had the wonderful pleasure of writing this book with 12 co-authors. The name of the book is called La oportunidad de trascender en medio de la crisis. That is basically that you have to take the opportunity to transcend in the middle of a crisis. And many of us tell our stories of how we overcame crisis so that we can walk in our excellence and help other people overcome their crisis and transcend from crisis to excellence.
And so many people need this book right now. They really do. So for those of you who are listeners and viewers, and you can read and speak Spanish, you can get that copy. And then when is the translated copy in English?
The translated copy in English should be out the 14th of this month. We had a launch party when the book was finalized. It was the 14th of June. And I'll be hosting another launch party once the book comes out in English. I'll be doing a live launch party on one of my pages. Of course, Cordelia, you are going to be welcome to that party, because I want you to have a few words on that party. And you can buy this book now at Amazon. I do have a link, and I'll share that with you. I'll send that to you.
Great.
And the link will also allow you to select if you want it in English or Spanish.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much. And any final words of wisdom for our viewers and listeners today?
That's a good question for God. Don't run away from who you are, because who you are helps you to be the best expression of you that God has given you to be. Whatever you are designed to bring to the earth plane, bring it, no matter what package it's wrapped in. Some of the packages may be torn, tattered, Some of the packages may be just filthy. But as I share with all people, when you look at my logo, it's the lotus flower growing up out of the mud. Your mud is your sadness, your guilt, your shame, the rape that I went through even, the obstacles in our lives that has held us back. Come up out of the mud, but don't be ashamed of the mud, because when you come up out of the mud, it's the mud that makes you stronger and that helps you to push you up into your excellence. So bring your story. Bring who you are, because you are more than great enough.
Thank you so much for that, Lotus. And
welcome.
Whew, thank you so much for coming into my life and being on my show today. And for those of you who are viewing and listening, and you've benefited from our conversation today, sharing is caring. So share this with another soul and tune in next week to the Free to Be Show. Thank you and good night.
Thank you.